Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. When measuring distance between ships, you measure from the plastic base of one ship to the plastic base of another, but exclude the part with shield dials. However, when you measure range from one ship to another for an attack, you measure from the cardboard ship token to the other ship's cardboard token. Further confusing the matter is that the plastic parts do block line of sight, and again, you ignore the shield dials, but when you check for overlapping, you do not ignore them. This means that you can place squadrons in base contact with ships by putting them against the shield dial. I highly suggest loading all of this into an astromech droid, as I have, to keep track of it all. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 8th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. This time, we're heading to Dantooine. It's definitely on Dantooine, for the Rebel Assault Frigate. The Assault Frigate is, first of all, a mouthful to say, which is why it is also referred to as the Guppy, the Whale, the Dolphin, the AF, and a host of other names. It's a mainstay of the Rebel fleet. In Wave 1, it was probably the most used ship for the Alliance, and now in Wave 2, it still appears in about 75% of the lists that I see. It's the ship that gave the Rebels their reputation for being fast-moving broadsiders with more shields than hull. As usual, there's two versions, and like the CR-90, they're called the A and the B. Both have the same broadside batteries of three red and a blue, but they focus from there into different areas. The A is a brawler, using two blues as anti-squadron fire instead of the B's single blue, and it has two reds and a blue out the front and the back, where the B has just two reds. The B is more of a carrier platform, though. The reduced firepower already mentioned is traded off for a squadron rating of 3 instead of the A's 2, and it's also 9 points cheaper. Both rock a total of 12 shields, which is the same amount and placement as the Imperial Star Destroyer, but only have 6 hull. So, which should you take? Obviously, the B is your pick if you're going squadron heavy, and the Assault Frigate is an excellent platform for that. However, if you're just going to be using it for the firepower, then the A certainly has advantages, but both versions have the same broadside attack, which is what you'll be using most, and 9 points can buy one or two very good upgrades, so the B is still a very solid choice. I mostly take a B in my lists, but if you're going squadron light, the increased anti-squadron battery may make the A more tantalizing to you. Now let's look at the upgrades. As usual, the Assault Frigate can be kitted out for one of two roles, carrier or ship killer. In officers, a ship killer should really be looking at intel officer over anything else. Carrier builds have a few more options. Adar Talon is good, especially if you're using this ship in combination with Yavaris to get a squadron into position for a Yavaris double tap. The Wing Commander is a good pick to give the flexibility that an enemy fire magnet like this needs to stay on the table with those engineering commands, but still command squadrons when needed. Both versions can look at the following instead of the previously mentioned upgrades, though. Walex Blissex shines here, as the Assault Frigate only runs one of each of the big three defense tokens. Depending on how important the frigate is to your list, it may attract a lot of fire, so Walex letting you burn a token and replace it could come in very, very handy. Likewise, I enjoy the support officer on any three-command ship, but it works very well on a faster ship like this one. Being able to get a navigate order to keep from flying off the board at a clutch moment more than pays for itself. Beyond those two, Lando Calrissian is a decent upgrade, especially if you're keeping your frigate at long range and can have your opponent re-roll one of those erratic red dice. Ramus Antilles gets good benefits, but I feel he's too expensive for a three-command ship that can stack tokens pretty well on the approach. And of course, leaving your officer slot empty is perfectly viable as well. Support Team has a solid upgrade for carrier builds, which is flight controllers. Adding that extra die will utterly overwhelm enemy fighters, cutting through defenses and getting your bombers into position that much earlier. For ship killers, I probably leave this slot empty, except in a very specific circumstance. Contrary to a lot of folks' first opinions, gunnery teams don't combo with the Paragon title, so I'd only really look at taking them if you're also running Admiral Ackbar. That way, if you're at long range and your second shot is obstructed, quite possibly by your initial target, you won't be rolling only two reds against it and get that sweet Ackbar boost on top. Offensive retrofit is a mandatory slot for carrier builds, but it's a tough choice to make. The two to look at are boosted comms and expanded hangars. Which one will really depend on your list and your strategy. Having a lot of fighters that'll need a command to run, well, they lean towards the hangars. But the assault frigate really likes to move fast and keep a distance from the conflict. So without boosted comms, you may find yourself out of range of the extra squadrons you could activate with the hangars. I personally give the edge to comms, but your choice should be based on what you need in your list. Ship killers should probably leave this empty, as the only non-squadron-related upgrade is the tractor beam, which can come in handy to keep enemies from following your frigate very well, but unless your battle plan requires them, I'd leave them at home. Same goes for the anti-squadron stuff, but if you're running a frigate A and want to make it a flak-firing beast, you could look at point defense reroute to make it a reliable damage dealer with those two blues. Defense retrofits in Wave 2 only has one really viable upgrade, electronic countermeasures. Back in Wave 1, before the XI-7 ruling killed them, advanced projectors were the thing to take so that you got the most out of the frigate's heavy shielding, but nowadays you really just want to keep that brace token available as much as possible. Comboing ECMs with Walex Blissex is an excellent idea to improve survivability as well. For turbo lasers, we once again see the two usual big dogs, heavy turbo laser turrets and XI-7s. I personally would choose the heavies here, as red dice don't give out a lot of accuracies to lock the brace down and make XI-7s great, but if you're taking intel officer and can reliably lock down the brace, then absolutely take the XI-7s. You can take turbo laser reroute circuits for 1 point more, which may lack the punch of the usual suspects, but it evens out the spikes in damage that red dice have, and having that peace of mind may be worth more than focusing your hits. Taking these is another argument to take Walex Blissex on a frigate as well, so that you can keep using that evade token. Finally, in titles, we have one for each build, but both are very situational for use. I've talked a little about the Paragon title for ship killers earlier, but I'll get more specific about it now. Paragon is a cheap title, mostly I think because it's hard to use. Getting a black die is superb, especially since it can be added at long range, but in order to get that black die, you have to be able to reliably double arc your target. With a high speed and only single clicks of yaw, keeping that up for more than one round can be tricky with a frigate. Because of this, and because the only other way to guarantee use out of it is being second player and having the first player choose your advanced gunnery mission, I tend to leave it out of my lists. The squadron support title, Gallant Haven, is more expensive at 8 points, but is far more versatile and always in use. In fact, with the right squadrons, it's downright amazing. In Wave 1, the best use of it was to take brace-based aces. Say that 5 times fast. Like Wedge, Luke, and Dutch, and keep them as close as possible as either escorts for the frigate or for the frigate to escort them in on a bombing run. With the Haven field and their brace tokens, an enemy needs to do at least 3 damage, or 2 damage and 2 accuracies, to put even a single point of hurt on them. That's either a very lucky roll or a lot of dice, so they can withstand a disproportionate amount of squadrons engaging them until the Haven moves out of range. In Wave 2, though, your options expand, making the Haven even better. Jan Ors and a couple of X-Wings can reliably keep your bombers safe on the way in, as her intel will make sure everyone stays with Haven, and her brace tokens can't be locked down. I talked last episode about using A-wings as close-in escorts, and the same works here, giving them added resilience as they intercept attacking bomber wings. In short, yes, Gallant Haven is a lot of points, but it's absolutely worth paying for as a centerpiece of a bomber delivery system. When deploying, keep in mind that while it moves fairly quickly, the assault frigate lacks the double yaw clicks that come naturally to smaller fast ships like the CR-90 and the MC-30. Like the MC-80, it tends toward gentle, lazy arcs as it circles. This means that you should not expect it to turn on a dime, and the direction you point it in is generally the direction it's going to keep going in. Unlike the ISD, it doesn't want to travel directly towards the enemy as a rule. While it can, in order to do a passing broadside, mostly it wants to circle about, so like the MC-80, you can deploy it sideways along the deployment zone, and in fact, with its higher speed, you can even set it further away than the sluggish 80. The hull zone layout of the frigate is at once one of its great strengths and its great weaknesses. Obviously, it has a huge side arc that allows it to maximize use of its biggest battery pools. However, you might notice that the front arc is slightly recessed into the side of the cardboard token, instead of going into the corner of it as you might expect. What this gives you is that shots that come in from more towards the front are less likely to be able to hit your side arcs, due to the current rules for drawing range and arc, and instead will hit your stronger front arc. It doesn't help all the time, but as long as the closest point of your hull token is that front corner, your four-shield front will take all the hits and keep your side arc fresh for next round when your opponent is forced to stare down those cannons. However, it also has a great weakness from hull zones, as the rear arc is even more recessed away from the back corners than the front arc is from the front corner. If you're giving your enemy a good look at your side arc, odds are they have a good shot at your vulnerable rear arc due to the around half inch or so of gap the rear arc has on the side, so be very careful about your positioning. The other thing you should remember is that the resiliency of an assault frigate is all in its shields. You are going to have to live or die by redirects, as well as braces. XI-7s will ruin your day, and since you're probably going to have only one side facing the enemy, there's nothing wrong with spending some engineering points to pull shields off the far side to boost up the side getting knocked around. That way, you get two shields back instead of one by regenerating with your two engineering points. Overall, the assault frigate is a lot like the MC-80, just lighter and faster. Unlike the NC-80, you're probably going to want to do more double arcing with the frigate, and the extra speed means it'll be easier to keep it at long range, away from the action. It needs more upgrades to put it on an even footing, but you can get 1.5 frigates for the cost of one loaded up MC-80, so it's going to be a mainstay in any Rebel fleet for a long time to come. After the break, it's time to go a-escortin' with the TIE Advanced.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back. And now it's time to discuss the TIE Advanced. The easiest way to think of the TIE Advanced is as the Imperial answer to the X-Wing. It has escort, and it rocks the same 5 hull that an X-Wing does, so it can take the hits while protecting more important squadrons. It rolls a respectable 3 blues against other fighters, and has 4 speed, so it can keep up with most other squadrons. That's just one less and one more in those categories than X-Wings, respectively. Now, while on the surface, it appears to be the same single-roll fighter that Imperials field, suited only for an escort role, well, it's actually a decent all-rounder. That black die it rolls against ships is a reliable one for damage, making it an uncharacteristically flexible squadron. This means that you could use it in a role similar to A-Wings, namely as an interceptor or in a massed group to hit other squadrons or ships as necessary, and it would perform perfectly well in this role. However, as an Imperial player, you have a lot of other good options, such as cheaper squadrons you could get more of, like a mix of TIE fighters and bombers, or more expensive ones like the Fire Spray that have Rogue and Bomber. That said, a massive TIE Advanced would be a hilarious counter to a massive A-Wings for just one more point a ship. Unless you want to experiment with massed TIE Advanced, I would take them in pairs. In a mixed Imperial list, they really are just there as escorts, with the black die as a good bonus. You can take just a single advance to save some points, but understand that if you do, it's going to eat all the firepower that enemy squadrons put out and die quickly, basically being a five ablative shields to your more important squadrons. If you're okay with that, one is all you need. I like pairs because when I take a good number of squadrons, typically there's one or two linchpins in the group that make the fighter wing come together that need protecting. And if you only have one advanced, it's easy to land an enemy squadron somewhere that they can kill that key component without being in the escort bubble. Remember that squadrons don't block line of sight, so bunching them up around your key units doesn't help at all. With a pair of advanced, though, you make it much more difficult to eliminate that unit, whether it's Reimer or Dengar or whatever. Get those escort bubbles overlapping, and your advanced will do exactly what they're built to do, and tank for your squadrons, hopefully keeping your plan intact long enough to be executed. TIE Advanced work well with just about any other squadron. They get a good boost from Dengar due to gaining counter from him. They also make Soontir Fel's ability go off regularly, and obviously, they protect any other fighter from getting wiped out. The only ship they don't work well with is Bossk, since his power relies on him taking damage. That can be finessed around, but that's not the advanced problem. They just don't want their friends getting hit. The TIE Advanced Ace is a little-known pilot called Darth Vader. He bumps up the anti-fighter dice by one to three blues and a black, and adds two brace tokens. And, oh, yeah, the Dark Lord of the Sith causes damage on a crit result. He's a whopping 21 points, making him the most expensive of Wave 1 aces, but that special ability turns his blue dice into 75% odds of doing damage instead of 50, and his black dice can do double hits just like bombers. It is important to note, though, that while he does damage on crits, he's not a bomber, and so doesn't deal a face-up damage card. It's a very important distinction to make. So, Vader can deal out the damage, and with that 5 hull and the braces, he can absolutely take it. He's probably the most straightforward of aces, as he's the same as a TIE Advanced, just better at shooting down other squadrons and taking damage. The only issue that I have with Vader is that he's 3 points less than just taking two normal advanced. There's a school of thought out there that puts him as the best option for a Reimer or a Fireball because of his brace tokens so that he can absorb more hits. And while that part is true, I have trouble with just including only him in a list like that. Yes, you'll need around 5 successful attacks to kill Vader due to those braces, which is a lot, but a canny opponent will simply not care about killing Vader when they can just go where Vader isn't. As I mentioned before regarding single TIE Advanced, Vader's only going to put out one bubble of escort, and it's fairly simple to plant squadrons where they can be outside that bubble and kill the important parts of a Reimer or Fireball. At 21 points, adding another advanced on top of him to supplement him is a lot to spend, so I prefer to go with just 2 regular ones instead of him to overlap escort bubbles if I run a Reimer or a Fireball. Where Vader shines on his own, though, is in a fighter wing designed to kill other squadrons. His resilience and damage output really come through when he tanks for IG-88, Aggressors, Soontir Fel, Mauler Mythyl, or TIE Interceptors that can blast away any fighters that try to take him down. He operates very well in this situation. Your opponent really wants to kill the other fighters that hit harder, assassinate, or do automatic damage, but can't because they have to get rid of Vader, and he can't be one or even two-shotted. Then, when they try, one of those other heavy hitters, or even Vader himself, wipes them off the board moments later. TIE Advanced are the closest thing that Imperials have to a cost-effective all-round squadron, but perform best as what they're designed for, escorts. They're tough to kill, hit back well, can keep up with most Imperial squadrons, and if the enemy fighters get wiped out before they do, they can reliably put damage on ships. You may feel like you have to take them, but you won't regret doing so. That's it for this episode. From now on, I'm going to be shifting to a bi-weekly schedule for episodes while work demands and store championships are happening. So I'll see you back here in 2 weeks for a rundown on the Imperial Raider and the last of the Wave 1 squadrons, the B-Wing. Take us out, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.